to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Jim Hansen sitting in for Frank. We're going to talk right now with Brad Patty, who spent multiple years during the surge as a tribal advisor to a succession of U.S. Brigade combat team leaders. Brad, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Jim.
Wanted to talk with you right now because we actually seem to be getting to the point where the end game might possibly be in sight. I know that's a bold statement, but we've heard that Baghdadi may be on the run. And we've also heard now that there is a deployment of U.S. troops into Syria. Now, that's a fairly significant departure. And there's been some discussion amongst U.S. leadership about what that might entail and what it might take to basically lock things up in Syria. What do you make of all that?
Well, in terms of deployment, it looks like it's going to be elements of the 11th Marine Expeditionary Unit and the 3rd Battalion, 75th Rangers. The Marines look like an artillery battery, and they officially say that they're there to provide fire support to U.S.-led forces, but indigenous forces in Syria. That's sort of the recipe that worked in the early stages of Afghanistan, as you know, except it was air support, but, you know, with special operations guys directing fire, worked really well. Plausibly, it could work here, too. Now, the 3rd Battalion of the 75th Rangers, that's a different animal. I mean, they aren't really saying what they're doing there.
They tend to break things and conduct raids.
Yeah. And in the past, they have spearheaded larger efforts by the regiment as a whole. Jack Murphy, who was a 3rd Bat guy and also a 5th Group guy at one point, had a piece on that in the last couple of days. And he mentioned that because they're co-located with regimental headquarters, sometimes the 3rd Bat goes in to lay the groundwork for the other units because it's easier for them to coordinate those opening efforts with headquarters. So that could be the beginning of something really big, or it could be them sending a battalion to break things and conduct raids. We don't really know yet.
All that makes sense, and I think the idea that a Marine artillery unit capable of operating in somewhat denied territory is eminently useful, especially if you also have a maneuver unit who can go and look to see what's going on and potentially exploit anything that's happening. So both of those make a fair amount of sense. Given the fact that now we hear potentially Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the caliph of the caliphate, the leader of ISIS, the big kahuna, may have bugged out of Mosul. If that's the case, we're looking at, you know, not just ISIS abandoning areas where they may not have been as strong, but that was one of their big wins, was taking Mosul. And now I think if that's gone, if they're under pressure, all the rest of it, are they potentially in a position where they may be looking to move the whole game elsewhere?
Well, you know, I'm always a little suspicious when I hear in the press that Baghdadi has done this or that. But there have been a couple of reports lately, and one of them is that he sent orders for everyone to prepare to move and to conduct terrorism elsewhere. So that's certainly possible. Now, in terms of him personally fleeing the city, there is a report to that effect. If I were running American efforts, I would be putting out propaganda reports to that effect, because we don't call it propaganda when we do it. We call it information operations. But I would actually do it exactly the way that the North did to Jefferson Davis in the American Civil War, and claim that he fled wearing women's clothes.
Which, in cases we've already seen some of the ISIS fighters doing, leaving in burqas, conducting operations in burqas, and then getting scarfed up. So that's not out of the question. So, Brad, if we're looking now at U.S. troops in Syria pressuring them, you know, difficulty for ISIS to maintain their base of operations in Iraq, who's going to own the ground when it's done? You know, there was a point in time where after the 2008 timeframe, the surge was successful. Al-Qaeda in Iraq had been basically beaten into submission. And we were looking at the possibility of a federal Iraq. The government was stood up. What do you do now? Iran has far too much influence. The Baghdad government is relatively compromised. The Shia militias, which are essentially proxies for Iran, are the ones who have done much of the clearing and now are in possession of a lot of the battlefield. They're looting it. They're committing war crimes. Who's going to be on the ground running things if ISIS is gone?
Well, that is actually the question that we need to be thinking about right now. Ever since the Iran deal, Russia has been openly backing Iran's play in Syria and to a certain degree in Iraq as well. And Iran has really run the table in terms of setting itself up with local allies. Our new ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, said that, quote, we need to get Iran and their proxies out, unquote. Well, getting Iran out, that's an extremely hard problem. Getting their proxies out is impossible because their proxies are local citizens. That's where they belong. There's nowhere to get them out to. A lot of this is built around Iranian efforts to organize Shias around the defense of Shiite holy places, especially the Saeed Zanab Mosque in Syria. But, it's all across this region. And in Iraq, groups like the Iraq version of Hezbollah have openly declared loyalty to the supreme leader of Iran and said, we're prepared to overthrow our government anytime he says so. So Iraq's government has theoretically passed a law last year that these popular mobilization forces, as they call them, these Iranian-backed Shia militias, they're allowed to fight, but then after the war is over, they have to demobilize. And I think we all know that's not really going to happen, but that's allegedly what the plan is.
I think we're running awful low on allies in the region. At this point, with the Iranian-backed militias, who will end up in some quasi-official control of a lot of these areas, nobody's really left. ISIS killed so much of the leadership in Al-Anbar, the Sunni areas are in complete disarray, and now are deeply divorced from any love there ever was with the Baghdad government, which is all Shia and Iranian-backed. The Kurds have their own nation-state in everything but a name. So there's really not much left other than hopefully, if we create a vacuum by moving ISIS out, that is a net gain. But at this point, I haven't heard a good plan for filling it. Now, the discussion has been around, do we conduct some sort of partition? Do we actually finally recognize the Kurds, give them a nation state, and move on from there?
Yes, that's a very plausible idea, except for the fact that one of our major NATO allies in Turkey is going to be completely opposed to it, as will both the Iranian government and therefore the Iraqi government. So this would have to be done by fiat of the United States, and we would have to provide whatever it took to support it. It might also break up NATO because Turkey might just decide not to continue to work with us on anything if we took away the Kurdish areas. And since NATO does things by unanimous consent, and there's no mechanism for expelling Turkey, then that means that NATO can't really do anything anymore if the Turks refuse to go along.
But what if we could convince Turkey to leave NATO through doing that? Like you said, we can't expel them. I'm not convinced they're an ally anymore. So I understand the difficulty there, but I'm also not sure that's not a lever worth using.
Yeah, that's almost certainly true. Inside of Turkey, there is within Istanbul and a few other places a class of highly educated, relatively secular, Western-looking Turks who look back to Ataturk and his secularization, modernization efforts as really the core of what their country ought to be about. These are very decent people, but they're totally out of power right now. And the guy who is in power, Erdogan, is openly an Islamist and flirting with Russia, flirting with China, and, really trying to negotiate a piece of the Kurdish regions larger than he already has with the Iranians and the Iraqis and the Syrians. But he would just sort of like to absorb some additional territory out of that. So can you get him out of NATO? I don't know. It depends on how dumb he is. He doesn't have to leave, and it's to his advantage to stay in and foil NATO's ability to do anything.
Brad, we have a big challenge in front of us, but I'm going to go ahead and be optimistic that at least killing ISIS is a net gain for the world. What we do next is going to be a challenge, but it will be better in the long run. Brad Patty, former tribal advisor in Iraq and a noted scholar on this issue. Thank you so much for joining us. And that's going to wrap up Secure Freedom Radio for today. I'll be back tomorrow sitting in for Frank, bringing you more ammunition in the war of ideas and the fight for the free world.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.